Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall.
Fantastic, fantastic show.
Chicago sports talk for your morning.
Oh, man, I really wanted to talk to him.
Appreciate the love, big homie.
You have to make a change, though, don't you? I know it's the first half of the season, but still, Nick Foles, he's a good quarterback. I mean, he's not the flashy quarterback, but we've seen enough out of Trubisky, I think, at this point where you might want to go ahead and make this change.
The Bears were behind 13-6. Mitch had gone 8 for 20. His passer rating was 58.3, 110 yards passing, and you thought, here we go again. The Bears could not get into the end zone. Two field goals was all they had to show for their supposedly new offense. And I understand where Tony Gonzalez was coming from. I didn't agree because I just felt like if you were going to make the move and install Mitch Trubisky as your starter, you've got to give any starting quarterback more than two quarters to prove or disprove you right or wrong. But I got the sentiment.
I think a lot of people watching, it went through their heads, not, wow, yeah, you know, he's going to grind with his teammates. But, boy, his stats are not good. It's happening again. My God, it's happening again. That's kind of how everyone felt watching that from the outside. Weird, weird season. Nobody in the stands. The fourth quarter, you're allowed that now on the road to correct the three quarters that came before.
Mike Mulligan and David Hall, taking you up to 9 o'clock on 670 The Score.
Okay, let's go.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Oh, my goodness gracious. Not for the faint of heart, but the White Sox take a lead in the division, extend it to two games, huge playoff-like victory over the Minnesota Twins last night, David. Wow. What?
Morning, Mully.
Yeah, what a relief, buddy. What a relief.
What a relief, yes. And the chill in the air, and it feels like fall outside, and it looks like it on your TV screen. That was fun to watch. And that was a playoff-like outcome and intensity and everything that you could have wanted from a White Sox perspective. And there was, you know, a lot of encouraging signs about how the White Sox won that game, not necessarily just that they won it, but they did the little things, and they won in a way that they don't typically win close games. Yep. And that's, you know, that what drama down the stretch, though. That was great.
Yeah, it was. You're absolutely right. They had to grind it out and create some runs, and it wasn't the long ball. It wasn't the home run derby. I don't know exactly what we were expecting going into that game, but it was a high wire act. I mean, my God, how many Twins were on base with the first hitter? It's a difficult way to get through life to have so many guys start out on first or second base to begin an inning. It was was just beside myself.
So the Twins, they lead off a guy in six straight innings. They end up with one run. And Mully, you're exactly right. First time in 7 years a major league team has allowed 18 or more base runners but only scored one run. That's how little they took advantage of the opportunities that were there. There were some White Sox pitchers that made some huge pitches in some key moments.
No doubt about it. And look, I mean, you can learn from victory. We talked about this with the Bears. You can kind of get a grip on things after the fact, as long as you continue to win. And I think that it's a great way to go about it. I think that it was a playoff atmosphere. I think Tim Anderson said that before the game. He was absolutely right. It was a great game, a really good baseball game. How about Nelson Cruz, huh? I don't know why I love that so much.
It's great. I mean, but because he's killed the Sox for so long.
I was muttering every time he came up. But, and, you know, the bases would be loaded or something would be happening. And I'd be saying things. I'd go to dark places in my mind about how he's so good, so
he stinks.
And I had to restrain myself from basically attacking the television.
If you didn't find it amusing that Nelson Cruz left 9 runners on base last night, you weren't paying attention. Because that was a guy... Of all the Twins that you would want up at the plate with the bases loaded, you would think he would be the guy you'd least like to see. And last night, he's the guy that did not come through. And that's a credit to, you know, a lot of things. I mean, it's baseball. But I think that, yeah, there were some moments last night where you just you wonder about the significance. You wonder about a lot of things, but this Sox team, they can do no wrong. They're on such a roll. It's fun. It's just, they are so much fun. Even when Eloy is throwing up his arms in the ninth inning and you're wondering what the heck is he doing and thinking, that was even kind of brought a smile to your face because that's just Eloy, you know?
I thought that was the second inside the park homer he was going to give up. I really did. I was just like, oh my God, you got to be kidding me. I hate to be overreactive, but they have some pretty good outfielders on the bench. Can't you? I mean, I don't know.
Well, that's
don't
a fair you, question, Mully.
If you get into the ninth inning, David,
You've got to ask that question today. I mean, look, everything is positive. The White Sox won a close game against the Twins in a playoff-like setting, but they had a two-run lead going into the ninth, and you wonder – okay, Engel's in because he pinch hit for Mazzara. When is that? You know, that's supposed to be the other way around, but he's already in. You've got Louis Robert covering everything else in center. Why is Eloy still in the game if Dyson's on the bench and he's on the roster for a reason?
Right. I mean, in a playoff situation, I know that Eloy would have led off the next inning, but if you catch that ball, you don't get to the next inning, right? So it's Jared Dyson is on the bench, as you say, and it just seemed like that might have been the perfect time, but I'm not going to second guess a win, and it was a very significant game because among other things, they picked up their 31st win of the season. So not only are they up 2 games over the Twins in the division, and whatever it is now, 4.5, 5 games over the Indians, they are a winning team, David. When the season began, what did I say? All I wanted was a winning season. Now I want a lot more.
Now you want more. You want more. You definitely want more. First time since 2012 that they have a winning season. That's great.
It's incredible.
And magic number now 4. And it's a credit to everything that's going on with the White Sox that it doesn't feel like that's enough. You want more because you've seen the capability here. This is a team that should be thinking big. They should be thinking as big as any team in the American League, as any team in Major League Baseball, because you know that they're capable of big things, beating you with the long ball, or last night, Adam Engel pulling back the bunt and then hitting it exactly where they ain't. And that was just a tremendous bat control at a clutch moment. Great for Adam Engel.
Yeah, that was great. You know, I got to tell you, I know Louis Robert, everyone's going to get down on him. He's kind of struggling a little bit. That at bat was unbelievable. His was that a 10-pitch walk? He was down 0-2 in the count. And, I mean, that was an extraordinary at-bat, and it helped set the table for everything that followed.
It showed a lot of growth, too, for a young hitter who's as aggressive as there is in the league. And you saw him kind of show the patience and the discipline that will make him so hard to get out moving forward. That set the tone for that inning, I think. You know, you look at everything else that happened, but he had to have that Mankata, very disciplined at the plate. He sends the right message, too. And, you know, Mully, I think we tend to look at how flashy the White Sox are and all they do offensively, and with the pitching it comes down to, obviously, we talk about Giolito and Keuchel. I think Alex Colome gets overlooked a lot, and he has been so good, and he was again last night in a 4-out. Not save, he got the victory, but he was clutch once again.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think he's having a great year, and that's something to be happy about. He does have a little Dylan Cease to him. He does live on the edge a little bit. It, you know, there's always kind of this, oh, come on. It's never as easy as it could be. But, I mean, I'm picking Knit. I get it. I don't want to, you know, as long as it keeps working, who cares, right? I mean, we're not going to get worked up over that in any fashion. But I do think that, I do think that some of this stuff could be easier on the psyche, on the nerves. I was wired for sound by the time I turned that game off. I wanted to turn it off earlier, but I couldn't. And then finally, you know, you're kind of getting that you get the first two outs, and then you finally get the game over, and you're just like, oh my god! And now how do I sleep? Because it was, I mean, my mind was racing.
Oh my god, who pitches game three? You know, it's like you're thinking
exactly
all these thoughts, and it's a 3-hour, 51-minute game. The Sox game seemed to be getting longer and longer, and that's not going to change as we get closer to October, the month, because that's the way playoff games go. But what a nice problem to have. And you know, Dylan Cease couldn't get through the fifth inning again, and I, you know, you wonder about that a little bit. 99 pitches, he looked so good on occasions, and then he, you know, had the walks that were a problem last night, walking five Twins batters. So you know, there's good and bad with Cease. I think tonight's going to be fun to watch Dane Dunning. He takes another step, hopefully, and just another young pitcher to get excited about on the South Side.
Yeah, here's hoping. The Cubs, of course, were off. They host Cleveland tonight. Yu Darvish is on the bump, and that, of course, that's win day, I believe. Isn't that what it's supposed to be? Alec Mills, the NL Player of the Week, after two good outings, including the no-hitter. So congratulations to Alec Mills, still being celebrated and feasted.
As he should be.
Yes.
Yeah. As he should be. His arrival, maybe, to a point in his career that you wonder what it will mean, and can he take that next step? And he is as big of a surprise as far as on the Cubs pitching staff? I think with the roster, it's Ian Happ. With their pitching staff, the way that Alec Mills has taken advantage of his opportunities has to be one of the most encouraging surprises they've had this year.
Oh, no question. I mean, who saw that coming? He didn't. It wasn't even part of the plan. The idea wasn't for him to be a starter. You know, Quintana gets hurt and he's forced into action. And you know, at one point maybe he was battling with Chatty, but that didn't seem to really come to any fruition. It was really the injury to Quintana that led to his opportunity, and as you say, really taking advantage of it. I love all these stories about how, you know, the Cubs were out hunting the next professor, and here's where they went, here's who they found. I thought the professor was the professor because he's an Ivy Leaguer and he outthinks everybody. I didn't know.
Alec Mills is more of like a TA, teaching assistant, you know, kind of learning at the feet of the professor.
I get the idea, but I just think it was kind of amusing to read a couple of those.
Making
things.
Copies, doing research, getting coffee, you know, those kind of things.
The Bears' next opponent was on display last night. Not sure how much of the game you watched. It was got a good hour in before the White Sox began, and they lost 26-16 to the Pittsburgh Steelers. And Ben Roethlisberger, who was back after missing the final 14 games of last season with the elbow surgery, he threw for three touchdowns. Mitch can do that in a quarter. So
that's a quarter for Mitch Trubisky. Right. Yeah, Giants are a team with a lot of issues. Saquon Barkley, 15 carries, 6 yards. That's not a misprint. 15 carries, 6 yards.
That's pretty ugly. I don't know what to say about that. There was a late game as well. The Titans won 16-14 over the Broncos with the late field goal from a man who had missed some earlier. So it
just
was
a couple, a few.
Yeah,
oh, maybe
few.
Four. How about four? Yeah.
Yeah.
Future Hall of Famer Steven Gostkowski. Did you hear that? He was referred to as a future Hall of Famer, and then he makes history, the kind of history you don't want to make, but all's well that ends well, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm sure they're feeling pretty good, even if they're bummed that Cody Parkey is going to be playing for the Browns. Everyone is. Yeah, very, very bizarre stuff. Huge stuff in the NBA. A big game tonight, the Clippers against the Nuggets. The winner gets the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals. That is huge. And obviously the start of the Heat and Celtics series. It'll be fun to see Jimmy once again and to figure out who's the best team in the East, given the fact that the best team has been eliminated. So that's a lot of fun. We'll talk about that. More stuff going on with the Big Ten. We don't know if anything will happen quickly. There are also plans to get rallies together to get the Chicago public schools, get the high schools in Illinois
IHSA,
back
yeah.
playing football. IHSA.
Yeah. There's a lot of movement with the high school coaches and players and parents, mm-hmm. but more so at the Big Ten level. The presidents getting together. That should happen today. The vote to start the season next month, which they're going to have to convince me exactly what has changed since the last time they voted on this, August 11th. I know everybody else seems to be playing, except for maybe the Pac-12, but you still have to convince some people that moving it up makes sense and is the safest thing for these players.
All right, we're going to get to all of it. The Pick 6 is next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 6 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mully and Haw starts now.
Given the continued performances by Jose Abreu and Tim Anderson, do you have any more clarity as to who is the White Sox best MVP candidate, and what is the deciding factor in your mind?
Boy, it's really neck and neck, and they're totally different type of players, and it's just extraordinary to see both these guys have the same kind of years they had a year ago and have the kind of years that that will separate them from others. Honest to God, right now, I think it might be Jose Abreu. I think I was more Anderson, and now I'm with Abreu. And I think the deciding factor is just that it's a 60-game season, and Tim missed whatever it was, 9 or 10 games. So I think maybe ultimately it comes down to something as simple as that. Abreu has also played a very serviceable first base, probably as good a defensive first base as I've seen him play in his career.
Yeah, he's helped out Tim Anderson at first base. He's helped out everybody in that infield, and that's a really good improvement in that part of his game. He's got the gaudy numbers, 15 home runs, 48 runs batted in. I know RBI is a nice stat to debate its importance, but he is driving them home, and I think that when you see who's next in the American League, he's got like a 8 or 9 run advantage. He's also the things behind the scenes in the clubhouse that he gets a lot of credit for can't be overlooked or dismissed either. Tim Anderson's terrific, and he may be somebody that takes votes away because he is such a legitimate, worthy candidate. You wonder if the White Sox guys are going to split the vote. But I would give Abreu a slight edge because of the intangibles and maybe because the defense that has really improved this year.
Can you believe this? Pick 6!
Is the Bears winning formula against the Detroit Lions sustainable? Can you win like that every week, or was it an only against a Lionsy team moment?
Well, the formula, you don't want to fall behind, 23-6. I wouldn't recommend that. That's not sustainable. But I think in terms of the balance, in terms of the run-pass ratio, yes, that is. Not only is that sustainable, that's necessary. You have to do whatever you can schematically and play calling to help your defense. It's complementary football. And I thought that Matt Nagy made a more concerted effort to be to play that way on Sunday. I don't know that you can win in the way that the Bears did in terms of, again, falling into the hole and not being, not executing in the passing game with Mitch Trubisky. We'll get to him later. But I would think that the Lions' victory reinforced to Matt Nagy how important it is to have something to hang your hat on at the end of the day. Besides these dramatics and heroics and things that aren't sustainable, you can't always run the football and you can't always establish that part of your offense.
That's not sustainable. You can't win that way in the NFL. I mean, you really can only win that way against a team as bad as the Lions, that is a team that is going to drop a touchdown pass I mean, they had that game won with 6 seconds left, for God's sake. So I don't think it's sustainable. I think the Bears need to improve defensively. I think the Bears need to improve on offense, need to figure out what they're doing with their offense and get to that a lot earlier.
That is a pick six.
Are you in any way disturbed by the fashion in which Mitchell Trubisky is used in Matt Nagy's system? Is there a way of using Trubisky differently, such as the sped-up offense in the fourth quarter? Why wasn't that employed earlier in the game, and why doesn't the coach have a better feel for the quarterback in year three together?
Well, I'm not sure. I think we have a feel for how Mitch performs at his best and what he does best, and I don't know that you want to build a game plan around that. I think that the information we're lacking as far as this is concerned, you look around the NFL and you see different quarterbacks, like, you know, Aaron Rodgers is a great example, certainly Russell Wilson. There are guys where you just say to them, okay, what do you want to do? Yeah, here's the game plan. We'll do whatever you want to do. And Mitch is obviously not in that category. So I think when you see different quarterbacks deployed in different ways and different schemes, you lack that information about what they believe the quarterback can do. I think as great as Mitch's afternoon was, and it was a great afternoon because it was something to build on, and he can get his confidence built up from that, and I think that's really important. But as great as the finish was, there was a lot of time in that game where he didn't give you a ton of confidence, where if you're the play caller, you'd have to be careful about it. So while I want Nagy to have more of an idea of how to deploy Mitch, I'm not sure that he doesn't already know what the quarterback can and can't do, and he's trying to deploy him in that fashion.
I think he does know, and I think, yeah, the comeback was historic. I don't think we should overlook that. The three touchdowns in the fourth quarter, it was amazing. But, again, that's not the position you want to put your team in from the quarterback's standpoint. And the guys that you mentioned, and the guys around the league, you look at being able to handle some of these changes, and no matter who the coach is or the play caller, Russell Wilson, Aaron Rodgers, they have a special skill set. And I don't know that we've seen that enough from Mitch Trubisky to say that he has a special skill set. So I look at the way that the Mitch responded to sort of the way things, after things broke down. I referred to him as last ditch Mitch. He sort of needs desperation to thrive. He likes the controlled chaos. That's not a game plan, though. You don't go into a game trying to control the chaos. You go into a game trying to eliminate it. And so whether it's the, you got to find a happy medium if you're Matt Nagy, and after 3 years you think he'd know where to find it, but you have to maybe increase the tempo without abandoning control entirely, and that's a very tough balance to strike.
It's a pick six!
Looking ahead to Bears-Giants, which of Sunday's two starting quarterbacks would you want for this season, Mitchell Trubisky or Daniel Jones? And which one would you want for the next 3 to 5 years? Yes,
wow.
You have to pick one.
Have to pick one. Ah, boy. You know, Daniel Jones last night didn't have it. You know, 26 of 41. He had some good moments. He had two interceptions, 79 passer rating. I don't know that I like how high he was drafted. I don't know that I like a lot about the way that they've invested in him. But Mitch makes me queasy too. So if I had to pick one, I would think Daniel Jones for the next 3 to 5 years. And I might ride Mitch a little bit this season. So I said take Mitch for this season, but Daniel Jones maybe for the future. Is that hedging it a little bit?
Yeah, I think you're allowed. I think the problem is that when we look at Mitch, we've kind of seen this show, right? We kind of know who he is. Maybe there's room for growth and improvement. Maybe he'll be better. But as a friend of mine was saying to me yesterday, my God, how hard is it to play in Chicago? You know, you have a bad game or you have a bad quarter and they want to line you up for the firing squad. It's just an impossible job in this town because of all the history. I will take Daniel Jones because I don't know him as much as I know Mitch, and it would be something different. I don't want to see the same that I've seen for another few years.
Pick six! Wow!
Alec Mills won the NL Player of the Week honors after his no-hitter. Would you give Mills the nod over John Lester in Game 3 of a playoff series, a decision the Cubs likely will have to make in 2 weeks? Or is it possible either Jose Quintana or Tyler Chatwood get the nod over both?
I like Alec Mills a lot. I think that he's done a great job, and I'm really pleased for him with his no-hitter. I think I'd probably stick with John Lester because, you know, the theory of the old war horse that smells the line and is ready to go. I think John Lester has such a great playoff history that I would lean on that a little bit, even if it blows up on me and I would have a guy like Millsy sitting there waiting to go. I think it is possible that either Quintana or Chatwood would get the nod over him, depending on when those guys come back and how they look. I think that it's a living, breathing organism, your rotation for playoffs. And I think that we have a very good idea of how to line up the first two guys. But after that, you might want to go with form. So if Lester is pitching better and he has that history, then obviously that's the answer. But if you get someone that really catches fire, if Alec Mills suddenly develops into something that you didn't see coming this year, then yeah, I'd stay with him. But I'm gonna bow to form before I make that decision.
Okay. I get that. I think a lot of people would. Boy, if Alec Mills has a couple more outings that are consistent or solid, or just they don't have to be shutouts, but if they continue to show the growth and he rides this momentum into October, I don't know how you pass him up. I am on the Mills train. I am saying, give the junior professor tenure in the playoffs. Let him get you where you want to be. I know John Lester is John Lester, but he has been the other guy, the guy you don't want to see, the guy with the kind of not hitting the spots too often this truncated season. You don't forget that in October, but I think if I had to choose between those two right now, trending the way that Mills has trended, I would go with Millsy. And then I don't know if I like the idea of Quintana or Chatwood over either one of these guys. I think that they haven't done it. They have been injured. They come back. You just don't know. There's going to be question marks. So I would think that they would be the third choice collectively behind Mills, Lester, and then one of those two.
Pick six.
This segment was brought to you by Hollywood Casino in Aurora and Joliet. The Cubs have five straight home games against the American League Central starting tonight with the first of a two-game set against the Indians, followed by three versus the Twins. What will be the Cubs' record in that stretch?
I think all the Cubs need to do is sort of tread water here and make sure that they don't lose all five, make sure they don't go 1-4. They need to avert disaster. That should be the sign on the clubhouse door, avert disaster, because now if they can do that against these teams, then they're going to be in a good spot in that division, heading into the playoffs, heading into the stretch run. I can't wait for that series against the White Sox. 3-2 will do it for me.
Yeah, I think 3-2 is a good answer. You would like them to win both series. That means taking two games from Cleveland and winning 2-1 the other series. That's asking a lot. However, which Cubs team's showing up, right? I mean, is it going to be the team struggling to hit, or is it going to be the team that scores a dozen runs and throws a no-hitter? If that group shows up, I think it's going to be kind of fun. But these are good teams, and Cleveland has been struggling of late, but they've got really good pitching. So it's going to be a challenge. These are good teams. The Cubs are up for it, and I'm with you. You know, 3-2 is great. Just get a winning record out of these games. I think that helps everyone, and I'd be delighted with it. Okay, that is the pick six. We've got Brad Biggs coming up in just a minute, and we've got Kevin with a few thoughts.
Thank you.
Brad Biggs. Biggs time.
Biggs.
With Mully and Haw. Biggs time.
The Biggs Report with Brad Biggs.
Biggs time.
Biggsy.
His name is Brad Biggs. Brad Biggs talks football with you.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Brad Biggs is the football man of the Chicago Tribune, a longtime contributor to the station and a valued friend. And he joins us on the St. Charles Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram Hotline. Biggsy!
Morning, Brad.
Morning, boys. What's going on?
Well, we should tell everyone that this segment with Brad Biggs, with our guy, is presented by MalMedicalChicago.com, where a full head of hair is the winning play. And, Brad, I think we look at where the Bears are at, And it's a really good position because you win that game, and yet you can be a little bit critical. And you can talk about, hey, the linebackers didn't play as well as we wanted them to. And you can have some assistant coaches being fairly blunt in their appraisal. And you can have Matt Nagy saying, I'm going to be all over Mitch after some of the things that happened in that game.
Yeah, that's a perfect world for a coaching staff, especially in September, early in the season, where you can go out, you can make just enough errors to really kind of press the players throughout the week and have no shortage of stuff you can put on film for them as examples of, hey, you know, we can't do it this way. This week, the Giants will take advantage of us if we repeat this mistake. But knowing that they got out of there with a victory that is in the conference and in the division as well. So it's a great situation for the Bears, and now they've got an opportunity to host a Giants team coming off a short week. With the Bears in a spot to potentially go 2-0 for only the second time since 2010.
Brad, it may work against the Lions and maybe the Giants, but 2-11 on third down's not going to cut it. Matt Nagy addressed that a little bit yesterday. We talked about how the increased tempo seemed to favor Mitch. Everybody kind of sees that and understands that. Is there a way to incorporate that earlier to kind of control the chaos or create it so you can control it earlier with a little bit more up-tempo, no huddle, things that seem to make Mitch Trubisky better than when he is coming, you know, the other way?
Yeah, I'm sure that's something that they're going to discuss. Do you consider some no huddle? You know, some teams will try to go to that in third down situations to catch the defense off balance, or occasionally you'll do it to try to prevent the opponent from being able to potentially substitute. But you know, I thought at the beginning of the season some clock management in terms of playing to the strength of the defense would be probably a good idea for the Bears, a defense that didn't play particularly well on Sunday. So I don't know if I'm ready to flip just yet and say, hey, they got to go no huddle because the next thing you know, when we talk about the need for the Bears to go no huddle, is they do that, they go out in a game, they have a few series of three and outs that take no time off the clock, and the defense is on the sideline for 2.5 minutes in real time, and they're back out on the field, and the defense gets ripped apart. So, you know, I just they need to look at why they didn't hit on some of those third downs. But I take some real positives for the offense out of the game. Mitch made some plays in crunch time, which was important to see, and they got the darn running game going. So I'd expect a step forward in week two.
What are your thoughts about the defense? You know, we saw the Giants yesterday. They played a really good defense in Pittsburgh. What's your takeaway from seeing Barkley kind of stuffed in the way he was? Does that make him less dangerous coming into Chicago, or more of a kind of explosive device that could go off on you?
Yeah, Barkley's a good player, and they're gonna have their hands full with him, especially the way that the Lions were able to run the ball with Adrian Peterson. You would think, caution people out there that week one of the NFL season is when you get the greatest overreactions in all directions, really, each year. So the Bears, you have to go back to 1965 to find an opener in which they gave up more yards than they did to the Lions here. They're a better defense than that, but I think they've got to do a better job on first down against the run, and then they've got to be able to create more of a pass rush. There was just very, very little pressure on Matthew Stafford. He had time. You know, they talk about the quick game. He had some longer developing routes going on there. I don't know that the ball was coming out of his hand hot all the time. That's not what you think of when you think of Matthew Stafford and how he plays. So they're going to have to find a way to be more disruptive. I think the Giants' offensive line has got some real issues, so that perhaps creates a good matchup for Khalil Mack in the Bears' front. But Mack with four sacks in his last 12 games, guys, that's got to be at least somewhat concerning for the Bears, because you can list a whole reason of things as to why he hasn't had more production in that area. But when you're getting premier pay at that position, you've got to find a way to get the numbers at all times.
I agree with you, Brad. And then I looked at Pro Football Focus had him for six quarterback pressures among edge rushers on Sunday, second only in the league to Joey Bosa. And I watched that game yesterday again in the afternoon, and I didn't see six pressures. I'm not quite sure how they're looking at that, but is that
maybe
is
if he that... could blow on them? I don't know.
Depending what kind of pressure.
Seriously, like, yeah. There's no way you could have, you know, rewatched that game and said, "Boy, Mack was really close." I mean, are there a couple plays where he's somewhat disruptive? Yeah. Did the Lions have to account for him? Yeah. There were also times they put T.J. Hockenson on him, a tight end in his second year, and maybe a back would chip late. The Lions were without their starting right tackle, and Mack spent time on both sides of the line. But the idea that he had six quarterback pressures and was second in the league, I didn't watch all the other games. I really struggle with that one. I know this. I don't believe he got a hand on Matthew Stafford, and the whole idea of pressures, that's a super subjective statistic and one that I would question in this instance.
Me too.
Yeah, I agree with you. Brad, reading your 10 thoughts, you mentioned there were 11 snaps where they were in 13 personnel. Five runs for 15 yards. Trubisky was 2 for 6 passing with 31. And you talk about play action and 13 personnel. They didn't do that very much a year ago. So obviously having the improvement in tight ends has kind of changed the way that they're going about what they're doing a little bit here.
Yeah, well, I think they talk about wanting to be unpredictable, and when you can roll two tight ends on the field, or in this instance, or in these instances, three, you've got the personnel out there that should allow you to run the ball with success, and then they feel like they can put a wide receiver out there, and that they've got some tight ends that are going to be certainly more involved in the passing game than they were against the Lions. That's sort of a developing part of the whole deal for them, and they can throw the ball. So how does the opponent want to handle them? Do they want to go run heavy? If the Bears have three tight ends out there, that might be a great opportunity for the Bears to throw the ball. They feel good about Mitch in play action. So I think it goes along with Matt Nagy talking about trying to identify or to discover an identity for this offense. They certainly want to be able to run the football. They want to be more balanced. They want to be more unpredictable. So we're going to see a real shift, I think, with a lot of that in terms of not only the 2 and 3 tight end, but having Mitch under center, which is something that they did very little of the last 2 years as well. If you go back and look at that game, I want to say he was under center for more than half the snaps until the final three possessions when they're down big and they've got to be in the gun and throw it there in the fourth quarter. So that's another sort of schematic shift if week one is an indication of what we have to come.
Brad, a lot of attention paid Jalen Johnson, who had a good game as a rookie at cornerback. A lot of attention afterward at his progress. But I thought Darnell Mooney, a fifth-round wide receiver out of Tulane, Matt Nagy mentioned him yesterday, 3 catches, 38 yards, a 19-yarder, nice connection with Trubisky. How surprised are you at his contributions?
Well, I think you talk about a fifth-round receiver going out there and doing something right away. You're a little. I don't know if surprised is the word, but certainly impressed. Here's the thing with Mooney. He can just fly, and so you could tell the cushion or the separation he was getting at the line of scrimmage because the DBs knew they had to understand his speed. So he can absolutely get off the line of scrimmage. He's an interesting guy to have out there in that 13 personnel, especially if you want to give Allen Robinson a quick break, because he can absolutely take the top off of defense. He can get vertical. And so I think he had 20, 21 snaps, something along those lines. They'll probably try to see if he can handle a little bit more this coming week. Now, it's going to change week to week, opponent to opponent, but speed doesn't slump, you know, and they're going to find more ways to involve him and see sort of what he can handle. But the separation he can get from a defensive back, the cushion he gets was really evident. And it's unfortunate there was no preseason, because he's the kind of guy that would have shown up probably on a handful of plays, and more people would have been excited about him coming into the season.
Great stuff, Bigsy. Thank you, buddy.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, guys, have a great day.
You too. That is our guy, Brad Biggs. Okay, we're going to bring in John Heyman next. We're going to find out where our local teams rate on a national scale. It's no longer about wondering if they can win in the division. We got a good sense that both these teams are playoff bound. I believe, magic numbers aside, it's like 99%, 100% for the two teams getting in. So we'll run that by John Heyman, find out if there are some big awards in the future for these teams. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.